Good evening, everyone. My name is George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm filling in for the legendary Art Bell. I'm joined now by a special guest, Dr. Eric Davis. Dr. Davis has had a very interesting career. I've known him for a long time. Currently, he works as a physicist at the Institute for Advanced Studies in Austin, Texas. He previously has worked here in Las Vegas for the National Institute for Discovery Science and is pretty familiar with some really strange research that's been underway here. He's had security clearances for a number of government jobs, including one for the Air Force that studied teleportation. Eric, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you doing, George?
Hey, Eric, good evening. Thanks for staying up so late with us. Can you first of all start this way? I know there's been some recent news about your teleportation study. I want you to capsulize it, though, for our listeners. Tell us what the study was, who sponsored it, and what you concluded.
Okay, the Advanced Concepts Office at the Air Force Research Laboratory, which is located at Edwards Air Force Base, California, that's one of the locations of many of the Air Force Research Laboratories, and this is just one office there. This office sponsored the teleportation study for the reason that it needed to develop a database or a knowledge base of the state-of-the-art of teleportation physics. The purpose of the study, as detailed in the contract statement of work, was to examine all knowledge of any developed physics or extrapolated physics that could be foreseen for the development of a teleportation process.
And teleportation, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but teleportation, are we talking Star Trek transponders? What do we mean?
How about like in the movie The Fly, that kind of teleportation?
And it's real. And you're saying it's
not,
real.
Star Trek's teleport transporter is actually a teleportation device. A teleportation device means to instantaneously transmit disembodied matter from one location to another. So you would assume that the matter would be dematerialized, turned into a beam of energy or a beam of matter, and rematerialized elsewhere, and that's one form of teleportation. But it's basically generically defined in terms of disembodied transport of matter. But anyway, the purpose is to study the scientific literature and collate and collect all the information known about the state of the art on teleportation. So I was to look at classical physics for forms of teleportation, quantum physics to examine what teleportation was possible there, and any other forms of teleportation that were known, that may be known in nature. And so the study ended up embodying the research that I had to do into that and collecting a database of references on the research literature published in refereed journals and government documentation and so forth. And then the end result was the final report, which was the study which became infamous all around the world, as you already know.
How well I know. So basically, you did a survey of the literature and the research, and you said, hey, there really is something to this teleportation. There really are great possibilities here. It deserves to be studied.
When absolutely. The news, and as a matter of fact, teleportation has entered the mainstream of quantum physics. It's known as quantum teleportation. It's not new. It didn't pop up overnight. It's been in development since the 60s. Alain Aspect was the first to do the very earliest experiments 20 years ago to demonstrate aspects, the very first aspects that led to the 1990s experiments and later experiments in this century, which firmed up quantum teleportation. Quantum teleportation, shortly, is just a aspect of quantum entanglement, the spooky action at a distance effect that Einstein so vehemently objected to, but unfortunately wasn't allowed to live long enough to see the light of that reality. Quantum teleportation means a physical system, a quantum system of matter or energy that's produced, and if you divide it into pieces carefully, then the divided pieces will remain in causal contact. They'll stay in the same system forever until you do an experiment on one of them, and the one you do the experiment on can be hundreds of millions of light years away from the other part. You could remove and separate these things from each other across the universe in space and time. And basically do an experiment on one, and the other will react instantaneously, as if you were doing the experiment on both of them at the same time.
Let me interrupt you
for
a second.
So what happens is that entanglement process, which is a complicated overlapping of the quantum states that keeps these pieces connected together through space and time, that entanglement allows the transfer of what's called quantum information.
Let me interrupt you for a second. Eric, can you hear me? Okay, let me interrupt you for a second here. After you did this study and showed that teleportation has great promise, the word about the study and the fact that the Air Force spent $20,000+, $30,000, whatever it was, that news went all around the world, created a huge firestorm. Critics all complained that what a waste of time this is. This is nonsense. It's science fiction. It'll never work. Right?
That's correct. And, of course, they didn't read the study, so they didn't know what the hell they were talking about. If they had opened up that report and read it, they would have seen Chapter 3 was quantum teleportation. And I cited all of the refereed physical review and physics D journals, physical review D journals, all of the physics journals that have reported, including Science and Nature, which are the premier top European international science journals. And I reported all of the teleportation and quantum entanglement experiments that have ever been done up to the point that I had written the final report and closed out that contract. And teleportation had been proved over distances of as much as several kilometers, even out in the open with very bad weather conditions, lots of wind, freezing temperatures, a freeway in between the communication link with trucks going back and forth. This was an experiment done at the Danube River in Europe a few years ago, and that was about a 600-meter experiment where they had a transmitter on one side of the Danube, receiver on the other, and they teleported a signal from one to the other, and the signal was teleported at high fidelity. The adverse weathers did not affect it. The motion of the tree branches and limbs and trucks on the freeway didn't affect it. The distance didn't affect it, nothing. And it was a proof of principle that we could exploit this this technology to then use teleportation as a means of space communications. We can do ground-to-orbiting satellite communications using teleportation with high-fidelity reliability and signal transmission.
Quick question here, Eric, because we're going to have to go to a break. But now comes word of this article by Gary S. Beckham, in which he suggests that the Defense Intelligence Agency, that's a very spooky guys in the government, have been taking a look at your teleportation study. In addition, they've been supposedly an elite DIA Tiger Committee has been taking a look at some of the stuff that's near and dear to my heart, work that's been done by NIDS about Skinwalker Ranch, which, as a matter of full disclosure, folks, I'm a co-author of a book about the hunt for the Skinwalker. And what do you know about DIA interest in your research and in what was done on the ranch?
As far as the DIA interest on the ranch, I have no knowledge on that. I know that during the Tiger Team committee meetings, of which one of my colleagues is a member, as a matter of fact, the former founding chairman of the NIDS SAB is on that committee. And I know that he stated that as a matter of off-topic conversations that were unofficial, discussions about the ranch took place, and there are people in government, in the defense business, who are essentially remembering the old remote viewing program days and remember that there's a reality to all this paranormal phenomena, and it has a benefit to scientific knowledge, new scientific knowledge in the future if we could continue to explore and exploit it. However, that's not being done in government, so people continue to follow it nevertheless. As far as their interest in my teleportation study, that has always been the case since the study was released. My study has been waived by the former commander of AFRL, that's General Lamy. He had a copy of that study at the War College, waved it around and said, this is an example of the kind of research I want done in my laboratories and of the kind of thinking I want done, because we've got to look to the future. The future is everything. We have to leave no stone unturned, because if we don't, the enemy will turn those stones over, and the enemy will find the phenomena that leads to new science and new knowledge that we're going to turn away from or ignore altogether, and they'll be able to develop a weapon or some sort of a system and exploit it against
Eric, I'm going to have to stop you here for I need to interrupt you for just a moment. We need to go to a break. If you would stick around until after the break, I have one more question I'd like to ask you about Bob Lazar and the physics of Bob Lazar, because he's going to be our guest later on. We're talking with Dr. Eric Davis, physicist at the Institute for Advanced Studies. I'm George Knapp, sitting in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. I'm George Knapp, coming to you live from Las Vegas, sitting in for the legendary Art Bell. We've been chatting with Dr. Eric Davis of the Institute for Advanced Studies in Austin, Texas, a renowned physicist. Dr. Davis, we've been talking to you about your teleportation study. Let's shift gears for just a moment. As you know, my principal guest tonight for the next couple of hours is going to be Bob Lazar, very controversial figure in ufology. I saw an email that you sent out last night to a chat group. It was pretty harsh in its in its evaluation of Bob. Let's keep it to the physics. You're a physicist. Tell me what about the physics of Bob Lazar doesn't make sense in your view.
Well, essentially, the propulsion system that he has described is nonsense. There's it's so superficial. It's also does not fit the pattern of what we would expect for any even future exotic gravity modification or amplification propulsion system. Even based on today's technology, it doesn't even come close. Also, his speculations on a stable element 115, there's no such thing. Nuclear physics has identified in recent experiments going back in the last decade or so, ever increasingly heavier atoms going up to element 116, 117, 118, and there's an island that it's what they euphemistically call the island of stable heavy elements above element 100. And unfortunately, when we say stable, we really mean metastable, and it's such that any element over element 100 are basically going to be stable for only nanoseconds, and then they completely come apart and decay down to the lower elements in the periodic table. There has been no element 115 or any other similar elements close in number to it that are stable over minutes or hours or even a second or a small fraction of a second. They're very unstable. They last probably 10 to the negative 13 seconds or so, maybe 10 to the negative 9 seconds max before they fall to pieces and decay away. So you can't have element 115. Now, there is a possibility where that might be changed by some physics we're not aware of.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Eric.
With the kind of physics we know, it's not possible. And
well, that's what I was going to ask, Eric. Is
that would make 115 stable. And plus, element 115 doesn't emit antimatter.
And, you had indicated that the...
Bob Lazar has supposed, so...
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You had said that the propulsion system is nonsense, of course, but... I mean, you work on some pretty exotic kinds of propulsion ideas there in Texas. You work with the legendary Dr. Hal Puthoff, who also is pursuing some very exotic possibilities. Isn't it? It's not possible that some more advanced civilization has a propulsion system that we cannot fathom right now with our understanding of physics as we know it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's possible. You can't dismiss that possibility. I mean, look at the neutron. Let me explain something to the public that may not that the public may not be aware of the fact that the neutron, a free neutron, has a lifetime of 12 to 15 minutes before it decays away. But yet neutrons, when they're bound with protons in the nucleus of an atom, they can exist practically for the lifetime of the universe. So you see, it's just a circumstance of energy and forces and other and possibly other things involved that somehow keep that very unstable neutron lying alive. In other words, it stabilizes it. Whatever circumstance, in the case of neutron bound with protons in the nucleus, somehow changes its lifetime. Its lifetime is able to be stretched from 12 to 15 minutes on up to nearly the lifetime of the universe, and that's remarkable. So that means that there is some way that we could take unstable matter and stabilize it, but we don't know what it is. But given the descriptions that Bob has given, it's just too superficial to be able to pin it down and be confident of the information. And plus, he had no access to any classified information. He worked in an uncleared area that was specifically designed for people with no clearances at Area 51. It's euphemistically called the pen. The pen or the tank. Different people have different names for it, and you do not need a security clearance to work there. And generally, it's a support type of, it's a support job location where you're not given access to any sensitive materials or information.
And how do you know that?
Generally to provide support to the operation of the facilities out there. He was a radiation, he was a radiation physics technician.
And how do you know that, Eric? How do you know? I guess part of the question.
That's what his supervisor said. The supervisor brought up his employment record on a computer and proved it. His supervisor, a woman.
Can you give us her name?
No.
So you've spoken to persons in with security clearances about Bob Lazar, and they've told you that he did work at Area 51, but not on any flying saucers.
Yes, he worked. He worked down there. Actually, I believe he was not even on Area 51 per se. I think it was probably stuck to the area out at McCarran Airport. But I believe that that Penn location is at Area 51, as I said. It's just that he's not in the he's not on the base per se in the secure areas where you have to do the code words and you have to show the IDs and. Go through a couple layers of security and so forth. So he was not anywhere outside of where the control is positively maintained for people that are not cleared. And it's a very limited, restricted movement area.
Well, Eric, thank you very much for staying up this late and offering your opinions on both of these topics. I know that Bob Lazar is listening right now. And if you can stay up, if you can stay up a bit later,
I congratulate you and Colin Kelleher on a magnificent book, "Hunt for the Skinwalker Ranch," is the most accurate book I've read that detailed and related the accounts of the Utah Ranch as I personally know it, being the one of the staff scientists on board that program. And I think you did a great job, and I want to congratulate you. It was a very difficult story to tell, and I think you did a great job telling it. You did some great research. And Colin, of course, with his help, you were able to transmit to the public the difficulty we had being able to study that property as a living laboratory without any ability to control anything.
Well, I'll tell you what, Eric, thank you for the plug. I hope the audience knows that I did not set that up or solicit it, but I thank you anyway. And maybe if I ever get to do the show again, we'll have you on to talk to you about the ranch. But
sure.
Thanks again for staying up so late.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take a short break. And-